This technology, that's why I am a testing, and I always say, I trust my manual way of doing things rather than this technology, because it disappoints us now.
May I just make a comment? Is it not possible for Parliament to get into these venues before to ensure, you know, that as we come in here, we are set up and that the equipment works?
That was what I was discussing with colleagues, that they should come before we get in here, so that they might rectify whatever that needs to be corrected. Otherwise, for now, let's forget about it. Let's trust ourselves. We have done this for quite a long time. So we are going to make it even today without this technology. Honorable members, I wish to welcome you from the constituency period. And I hope that Mr. Stein, you have worked very hard for the federal, what is it, federal council. Oh, it's still coming. Okay. So let's hope that next week we'll get good news that you are part of the executive council of that federal council. Just in a light note. Honorable members, we do have our invited guests from the Auditor General's office. We also expect FSC representatives to be with us, and we also expected to have PSC, but unfortunately PSC is not going to be part of us today because they are already having so many engagements within the walls of this parliament today. Most committees have demanded their service. So we agreed with them that even after this BRRR process, we will still going to invite them, because it's a process. It's not just a one-off. And then a member of parliament can't ask me that. And we do have our friends, our sons, our family, the human settlements. I think there's a Babulu Rumopano, Nokava, Milile, No Solomon. Yabona ke abantwana bam anizi kalo kwiParliament. Nina anizi eParliament. When the department comes to Parliament, they just shut the doors for you not to come. So I know you, but I forgot. You're going to introduce yourself. And then I welcome you all, and there's also a researcher here from the African National Congress, I could say. These researchers, wherever they feel, they just come. And then you just think that they are going to be consistent to be, so that they can be familiar with the issues of human settlements, and then they disappear. Last time we had the DA, the other time we had the Pope, but they are not consistent to these meetings. And then we do have our PFG. I don't know who's at the back. There's a gentleman there at the back. Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning. I'm Elijah Mogolola from Parliament's Communications Unit.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, let's allow members to introduce themselves, because it might happen that some of us are not familiar to the members and then the department, and then as well as the Auditor General.
Good morning. I'm Gloria Borman, a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Butchstein, and by my presence here, I'm obviously a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Archibald Figlin, a member of this committee.
Morning. My name is Doris Labute, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Johanna Boyson. I'm from PNG.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tobani Mateza. This department is under my cluster, Social Transformation.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Andre Segeto from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning. My name is Cyril Lomadima. I'm from the Department of Human Settlements. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Yvonne Mbani from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning. My name is Sean Solomon from the National Department of Human Settlements, Office of the DG.
Mili Lekaba, Office of the Director General, Department of Human Settlements. Thank you.
Romo Galako from the Ministry.
As well as whom are you representing? thank you very much. Honorable Minister, you are welcome. I think it's you who delayed us. We're waiting for you. thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think let's get the apologies from the Secretary.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I have received two apologies, one from the whip of the committee, Mamoso Sibo, is not well, and Bama Choba is with a cocktail notice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andres. I'm handing over to you. Just to brief us, the committee, in terms of the observations that have been made by the Auditor General on the performance of the department for the past financial year, which is 2010-11. Members will recall that this period we are busy preparing for the NTBBS, and we are also receiving the annual reports from the department where we are going to evaluate the performance of the department. If they have managed to achieve the targets that they have set for themselves for the past financial year, and how they have spent the money, is there any value for the money that has been appropriated by Parliament? And if they have not done so, what were the challenges? And we are going to prepare those reports in this two weeks period. Starting from today, we will be working very hard. To such an extent, tomorrow we are going to hold meetings up until evening, 8 p.m., starting at 9, and we'll start at 10. No, we'll start at 9 tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll start at 10 because you should not have enough sleep on Wednesday. So we're just giving that 1 hour. So that at least you prepare yourself for the next session of the meeting, of the our meetings. So these BRRR reports are expected to be adopted next week by the 19th, so that before Minister of Finance present his MTBBS statement. So that is why it is very crucial that Asizulala Makabani. With those few words, you are all welcome, and then I'm going to hand over to Andres.
Thank you, Chairperson. Obviously not a very good start for us, but I'll refer the members of the committee to the handout that was handed out, and hopefully, I hope all members got it yesterday, because it was distributed yesterday for your perusal, and at least to digest the document and have a meaningful session today. I beg your pardon,
I'm not saying members sleep over here in Parliament. We sleep over in various areas. So we received this document this morning. No, I'm just joking.
Anyway, honestly. Well, then I'm glad. Thank you, ma'am. I'll refer the attention of the committee members to page 2. Obviously, just highlighting the office of the AG's mandate in terms of the Constitution to say that really our main aim is to build public confidence, and the only way in which we can achieve that is through conducting our audit and to make sure that we enable oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. On page 3, that just basically sets out our executive summary. And I just like to quickly highlight to the members that I do tend to talk quite fast. So at any point, a given point in time, if you feel that I'm talking too fast, please feel free to stop me or ask questions at any time. Anyway, on page 3, so it just basically gives out the basic outline of what we are going to discuss here today. I think the main focus will be on the opinions and then obviously the actual audit outcomes achieved by the department. On page 4, we basically just, again, our objective saying we are here to discuss the audit report. Our factual audit report is tabled by the National Department of Human Settlements for the current financial cycle. I would ideally like the audit, the committee members to understand exactly what the different opinions mean, how you should interpret them, significant findings, how they interlinked with a specific opinion. And then obviously, as it's a public department, how public interest relates to the specific audit opinion that we've issued, and then just the conclusion in terms with the specific interpretation as well. On the next page, that just sets out our legislative requirements, basically saying that in terms of PFMA, the accounting officer has certain responsibilities as mandated by the specific piece of legislation. Section 40 just basically deals with how the accounting officer of any department must first of all maintain, and then second of all, also adequately report on financial information. Section 41C then also puts a specific onus on the accounting officer to say after 2 months of the financial year ended, they must submit financial statements for audit to the Office of the Auditor General. And then obviously then the next one just said that we must then audit those submitted financial statements. And then the second piece of legislation, which is our constitution, just basically deals with what I've highlighted on the second slide in terms of the AGFA's mandate, in terms of section 188, it says we must report on all accounts of financial statements of financial management of all government institutions. The Public Audit Act just basically then further informs that specific mandate to give us a specific guidance in terms of what it is that we must audit, and it clearly sets out that it must audit the financial statements and the financial position, the compliance and financial management, which obviously then sets an audit apart conducted by the AG from normal audits or private sector, and then obviously also our predetermined objectives as well. On the next slide, focus areas and content of the audit report. I'd assume that everybody would be very interested in the audit opinion issued. And the other matters that are normally highlighted in our audit reports are matters of importance to users of the financial statement. And those are normally matters that are either disclosed by the department themselves or which were detected by the audit processes. And then obviously the predetermined objective compliance matters and then matters of internal controls and then other investigations if there were any. Okay, different audit opinions. This is now where the piece of technology is really hampering my progress because I've actually put them in, flying in, and the specific faces come in linked with the different opinions. The first opinion, which is the ideal one, is unqualified or unmodified audit opinion, followed by a qualified opinion, disclaimer, and adverse opinion. with all the different faces. Like I said, disclaimer and adverse opinions is ideally where we would not want to be. A qualified audit opinion, yeah, whilst it's not the ideal, but it is frowned upon behavior because you are qualifying on a specific component within your financial statement. Okay, on the next slide, I've just given a brief description of the different audit opinions. Unmodified is expressed when obviously when the auditor is very happy with the financial statements and we are satisfied that it does indeed provide a true and fair reflection of the financial statements in all material respects with the financial reporting framework. An unmodified opinion with an emphasis of matter, that's still the status quo, but saying there was some form of transgression or contravention which was detected and reported adequately by the department, and we are just merely highlighting the attention of the users to that specific item that was emphasized. And we'll deal further on in the slides with exactly how and what the emphasis of matter is. Modified or qualified audit opinion, normally these will pertain to a specific component in the financial statements, like for example, if the financial statements in all material respects you're happy with them except for a specific one component, for example, assets, if you couldn't verify the existence of assets, and that's quite significant, the material for that component, but in terms of the financial statements as a whole, not that material, and you would qualify that specific component. On the next page is a disclaimer. Normally, disclaimers issued, again, where there's a limitation of scope. That means information was not issued in order for the audit process to be able to verify whatever information was reported on by the specific entity. And obviously, that also has an element of significance and materiality attached to it. Normally, you would also find that you disclaim in terms of a component like assets. If you weren't able to find supporting evidence for your cost, you disclaim in terms of your cost for assets, etc. Adverse opinion, that's the worst opinion that any entity can get, and it basically just says there were major disagreements with management. We conducted our audit processes. Our audit processes indicated something different, and management is not willing to adjust. And then there's a big disagreement. We're saying we're standing back. It's quite pervasive and it's quite significant when you compare it to all components within the financial statements as a whole. Okay, the history of audit opinions of the department. We've been relatively fortunate over the past few years by receiving unqualified audit opinion, but we always with an emphasis of matter or something that's highlighted in terms of compliance or internal control. And again, if you're getting a clean audit opinion and you've got some matter hanging around there, like an emphasis of matter, just leave that little sour taste behind the mouth, because you're clean, but you're not really that clean. And obviously, the goal is to achieve an unqualified audit opinion with no matters highlighted. Again, this is where the faces would have flown in at the end after our discussion, but now they're there on the slide already. As far as the content of the audit report is normally structured, this is basically the structure of our audit report. I think the first two issues that I'm going to deal with, or that I'm ideally want to highlight, is the audit opinion and then the emphasis of matter and additional matters. But as far as the structure is concerned, you get the report on our financial statement saying this was the accounting officer's responsibility, the AG's responsibility in terms of all pieces of legislation, our opinion that's issued, and then we'll go to other legal or regulatory requirements. And why we call them legal or other regulatory requirements is obviously we're not expressing an opinion on like predetermined objectives yet and compliance with laws and regulations, although if you would recall in the beginning when I dealt with the legislative requirements in terms of the Public Audit Act, we are required to express basically audit compliance and predetermined objectives. So we're just saying this is a report on our financial statements. We just contain the financial figures, and then we will just highlight significant findings in terms of predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations and then in other methods of internal control, etc. I was actually ideally hoping that all members of the committee would have a copy of the annual report in front of them. I haven't seen anybody with a big book in front of them. 100%, I'll give you a round of applause. So I'll refer the attention of the members to page 139 of the annual report for the audit report that's issued by the Office of the AG for the current financial year. Already, man. Okay. As highlighted just now, the first two or three basic paragraphs just deal with the responsibilities and the introduction. So I'm not going to deal with them in a lot of detail because, I mean, there are just pieces of legislation and just saying what it is that we conducted, what an audit involves, very high-level explanation. And then the most important bit of the whole, probably the whole annual report, what I would like to think of it, paragraph 7, which then gives us our opinion saying that we are unqualified in the current financial year. I'm now going to deal with the emphasis of master paragraphs. Why would we feel the need to emphasize something? Basically, it is just to draw the attention of the users to a matter that's disclosed within the financial statements of an entity. So it's just a highlighting a matter that we think is of importance to the users of those financial statements. We also do have additional matters that we also sometimes highlight. Additional matters, the difference between an additional matter and an emphasis of matter is just basically the emphasis of matter is already disclosed by the department. So, for example, if the department has incurred irregular expenditure, they are required in terms of legislation to disclose that, and we'll just highlight that because it deals with public interest, you know, spending of government money and public money, etc. Whereas an additional matter is just relevant to the understanding of a user's of the report to the users, and it's just basically it is the responsibility of the auditors. Well, we may choose what we need to highlight additionally. So those are normally the important, but with regards to the emphasis of matter and additional matters, you would note that in my opinion at the end of on paragraph 8, I say I draw attention to the matters below, but I do also say that my opinion is not modified in respect of these matters, so it does not bear any impact on the audit opinion per se. Okay. Items that we normally highlight as emphasis of matter, that's just a financial reporting framework. That's a standard paragraph that the Office of the AG emphasizes on an annual basis, and that's for the pure simple reason that if you read the pieces of legislation like the Public Audit Act, they will actually say that we are supposed to express an opinion that says fairly present or properly present, whereas now you find the departments are still on a modified cash basis of accounting. They haven't fully implemented adequate reporting standards like GRAP, for example. So there's still one leg on the one side and one leg on the other side, and that's why we're highlighting, saying that my legislation requires me to express an opinion in terms of this, but basically the department is still utilizing the modified cash basis of accounting. And then obviously all our significant uncertainties, we do highlight those because of the significant framework. You never know what the outcome is, and that's why we just draw attention of the users to those. Restatement of corresponding figures, that basically if something was missed in the prior years with regard to disclosure and you do detect it sometime in the current year, if we just highlight that this is the specific item, and I think we do have a specific disclosure in the current year audit report that dealt with the lease commitments which were omitted in the prior year disclosure figures. And obviously all other items like material underspending where you feel your accruals are not complete, and I think the accruals the committee would have a little bit more of appreciation for, because in the underspending obviously, but the accruals, because we're trying to move away, like I've indicated, the financial reporting trying to move away from this modified cash basis of accounting to fully GRAP accrual based type accounting. And then material underspending, because that deals with service delivery aspects. You know, if you're not spending the money, that means that something wasn't done or implemented. And going concerns in financial sustainability, but that's more applicable on entities like public entities, Schedule 3A to 3D entities, where some of them are utilizing their own ways of funding and keeping the operations going forward. And then additional matters, just like I've indicated prior, audited by a predecessor, you'll hardly find that in the department, because all departments are normally audited by the Office of the AG. Material inconsistencies included in the annual report. If you notice the specific audit report, I do have certain pages in it, just from page, whatever, from page 142 to page 149, where the annual report is probably 500 pages thick. So there are certain information, like for example, where the accounting officer will feel that they need to provide narrative, and they make reference to the financial statement figures that we've audited. If there's inconsistencies between those, then we ideally highlight those, because I mean, you can't say the operations for this year expenditure is this much, and we've audited different figures in the financial statements on which I'm expressing an opinion on. And then as far as on the next page, as far as the actual report of human settlements is concerned, I think the department did quite well to get an unqualified audit opinion. We've certainly seen in our general report. Yes, Mr. Stein.
For interrupting. I was just, the presenter switched over from material inconsistencies to the next. I was quite interested in finding out what those unaudited supplementary schedules are, and you didn't touch on those. If you could just please.
Thank you, sir. But again, hand in hand with the explanation that I've just given with the material inconsistencies, the annual report, some of the annual reports are 500 pages thick. And I've audited the financial statements which comprise the statement of financial performance and financial position and all the notes and disclosure notes. And in certain entities, you find that certain entities feel the need to disclose additional information, like they'll give a more detailed income statement, for example, they categorize by their functions now instead of the accounting norm. So they'll say, for example, something that relates to marketing, they'll split it further. It wasn't actually marketing, now it's promotion cost, and I didn't order that specific categorization. So normally we'll just put in a standard disclosure paragraph to say the attached schedule from pages, whatever, an extra 1A to 1F have not been audited by us, so they're just for informational purposes. And I've noticed that some entities, I really like putting them right behind the financial statements that have been audited by us. That's why we're just covering ourselves as well, because a user may interpret, you start the audit report, you see the financial statements, you may interpret it forms part of the schedules as well. So I need to go through the rest of the other two. Thank you, Mr. Fang. As just mentioned now, the department did quite well to get an unqualified audit opinion on its financial statements in the current year. We're currently busy with our general report on the PFMA cycle as the Office of the AG, and we've seen quite a number of regressions as well. There's been improvements, but quite a number of regressions as well in financial reporting in departments. And that just dealt with a lot of lack of oversight responsibility, laws and regulations, and I think the department really did quite well to get an unqualified audit opinion. But as mentioned earlier, with the unqualified audit opinion comes that little sour taste behind the mouth, because we still have emphasis of matters with regard to irregular expenditure. And I think the committee is well aware that these three types of expenditure, it's quite a frowned upon behavior, the fruitless and wasteful, irregular and unauthorized expenditure. And in terms of the legislation as required by PFMA, accounting officers is not only required to report on it, but you must, before you even get to the reporting phase, you should have prevented incurring that. And once you realize that you've incurred it, there's certain processes that you must go to detect it and then adequately report it in the financial statement. And obviously, like I've mentioned, it deals with public money. Do we not procure in an appropriate manner, etc.? And that's why we also highlight those to the users of the financial statement. The department also has significant uncertainties in certain various... as I was saying, significant uncertainties just related to a couple of various lawsuits which were outstanding, pieces of outstanding or pending litigation as at year end that we noticed. We normally highlight those, as I've mentioned, because you never know what the outcome is. And because we don't know what the outcome is, we have to mention, because we may have determined via our confirmation processes by the legal representatives of the department and the department's own legal people that, let's say, for argument's sake, a case is pending for 100 million and some evidence comes to light, and then, or 100,000 rather, and it becomes a million. Because we don't know what the impact is going to be on the department, that's why we highlight this, but at least somebody knows that there is a specific piece of pending litigation against the department. And then the restatement, as mentioned, it was quite significant, in the sense that it was, first of all, a compliance issue that we were supposed to disclose lease commitments, and it was omitted in the prior year. And I think the committee is more than welcome to ask the questions as to how that happened, and the answer will probably be BMT, because obviously we were also supposed to pick it up from the office of the AG, and it was never picked up. And we get to the stage where I'm auditing in the current year, I noticed that something was omitted in the prior year in terms of disclosure requirements. It's not a significant thing that would have had an impact on the audit opinion. It was just a disclosure that was omitted. Okay, and then as far as the material underspending is concerned, as also mentioned, we highlighted that specific material underspending because it deals with an issue of service delivery, what happened, why wasn't the money spent, and those are the typical questions that I've noticed this committee asked now, because that obviously impacts on the outputs, number of outputs that were supposed to have been achieved in performance, etc. Okay, on the next page, predetermined objectives. I think as the committee is well aware, the aim of the AG is ideally to express an opinion on predetermined objectives, because that deals with the matters of service delivery and output. But I don't think, as far as government fears out there are concerned, that they are quite ready to be audited. It will be quite a futile exercise. But it's quite a nice phasing approach, and every year we're getting a little bit more detailed. We're giving a little bit more structure, and it's also quite a learning curve from both parties, because we all know now sort of trying understanding what exactly is required out there, what committees like these are exactly requiring in terms of output and what you want to be reported on.
You are behind us.
You are very clever, man. It's, yeah. So when we audit predetermined objectives, we audit against a specific criteria. The first issue that we look at compliance issues, compliance with regard to the reporting. We start off by taking the strategic plan, and then we look at the strategic plan. Does it conform to the SMART principle for argument sake as required by national treasury regulations in the performance management framework? And then we look at the usefulness of the information. Is it measurable? Is it relevant? Is it consistent? And then ideally, we look at what was ultimately reported in the annual report. So we'll take a strategic plan, we'll take your annual report, and you compare the two. Do they speak to each other? And whatever has been reported, is it adequately substantiated and supported by supporting evidence? Okay. So when we conducted our audit, we found two criteria for one thing in the department. There was the usefulness of information. We found that certain of the targets were not measurable. And when I mean measurable, for example, if a target says a report must be issued on this project, yes, you've got a tangible output, but by when and how do you measure that? Because you can't link it to a specific project. And then also with regard to the reliability of information, we had specific issues with regard to completeness, which means that certain issues were reported on in the annual report, and we could not find substantiating or valid evidence to support that, so saying is it really complete in terms of our reporting. And then when we move over to the compliance matters, we just highlight the pieces of legislation that we noted that were transgressed. The Public Finance Management Act, obviously, if you incur irregular expenditure, regardless of whether you disclose it or not, you're already non-compliant because the Act says you must prevent it. So if you didn't prevent, you're already non-compliant, unfortunately for departments. National Treasury Regulations, that was with regard to the procurement and obviously the strategic planning and performance management, which I've just spoken to with regard to the strategic plan. And then we look at other pieces of legislation as well, like, for example, the Public Service Commission, the DPSA, in terms of approval of public service regulations, appointments in HR, we check adequate structure, organogram, all this other stuff as well. As far as internal controls are concerned, I don't know whether the committee is familiar with the key controls process as implemented by the AG, whereby we issued a dashboard with all the faces on. Basically, it's a summary of our assessment of key controls that we think should be applicable in an entity that would result in better audit outcomes. Saying if those controls are at a minimum, maintained throughout the year, that would result in better audit outcomes. And that specific document is basically structured in three fundamentals that we hold key in achieving better audit outcomes, and those are leadership, where we deal with issues of leadership, was there adequate oversight, was there adequate reviews of laws and regulations by the oversight responsible bodies, and then financial and performance management, where we dig a little bit deeper. Now we're saying, do you prepare reconciliations, do you maintain adequate supporting systems, and then our governance structures, where we say, is there adequately effective and functioning audit committee, do we have a functioning internal audit function, do we conduct risk assessments. So we did note certain shortcomings in two of those specific fundamentals, which we will talk to just now in a little bit further on in the slides. So it's quite important to note on the next page, I think we're probably on page 18 now, 16. What's very important to note in terms of emphasis of matters is that the office of the AG can only emphasize a matter if it has been disclosed by the department. So now, for example, if you go back to the example of irregular expenditure, if the department has incurred irregular expenditure of 10 million, and we go and we audit and we say, actually, it should be more, it should be 12 million, and they do not go and adjust the financial statement, then it becomes a qualification on the completeness of the expenditure. But if they go and disclose, then the financial statements do fairly present because we've noted it's 12 million, they've adjusted, they're saying it's 12 million, but we're emphasizing it because they're disclosing it. And obviously the restatement of corresponding figures as I... Yes, ma'am. Okay. Basically...
Can I add a rider to that in terms of the response? What if the department doesn't disclose it?
Then it becomes a qualification.
But you're not aware of it because they haven't disclosed it. So,
if the committee listened to my example, I said if the department discloses they've incurred $10 million worth of irregular expenditure, and we go and we conduct our audit procedures, and we actually know that it should be more because there were procurement processes which were not followed for additional matters, then we come and we say now we've reached the conclusion that we feel it should be $12 million, and the department does not disclose. We now know that it should be $12 million, and they are not disclosing $12 million. Then it becomes the qualification on the computers of irregular.
Sorry, Chair, my question is actually if they didn't disclose the $10 million. Let's assume they didn't disclose it at all. Now you're not aware of it. So, do you find those situations?
Absolutely, Mr. Stein. We do find instances where departments or entities have not disclosed anything, whether it be due to a lack of processes to identify irregular expenditure incurred, or whether it be due to a lack of interpretation of legislation. Because I'll get to the interpretation part just now further on. But if they haven't disclosed anything and we come and we conduct our procedures and we say, but we think you should have disclosed $10 million, you haven't disclosed anything, then if they correct and adjust the financial statements, it just still becomes an emphasis of matter because the financial statements ideally will still fairly present because adjustments have been made. So what's disclosed is what should be in there, whether it was detected by, I think in the beginning of the slide I said whether it's detected by the department or disclosed by the department or detected by us. As long as adjustment is made with the financial statements, my opinion says fairly reflect or represent. Okay, so the irregular expenditure that was incurred was to the tune of $12.1 million, and the majority of it related basically to the Triple PFA Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. Now, I think there was a bit of confusion with regard to the application of this act, and this act has actually, funny enough, been in implementation since 2000 or 2001. Now, what that act basically says is, if you read it, it says, a tender document is any written offer to any organ of government to procure goods. So if I give you a quotation to procure with the department, then it means that's a written offer, it's a tender document, regardless of whether it's above 500,000. There's always been this confusion that a tender means a comparative bid which is exceeding the value of 500,000, because a different set of procurement rules then become applicable, because then you have to go advertise 21 days and the whole comparative bidding and adjudication committee ways. If it's less than 500,000, the rules will always, you get three quotations, and the scoring system is also applied differently. But what the specific contravention which was highlighted in this specific scenario of the department was basically the Triple PFA requires all tender documents to state exactly which preferential point system will be used once you submit your offer to procure, or once the department actually invites you. Now, we looked at the department's RFQ, the request for quotations, and it did not stipulate that specific piece of legislation. Neither did the application forms for all bid documentation between 30,000 and 500,000. It was a specific transgression. It was just the application of the law, and we just went to the department and said, if you apply the strict prescripts of the legislation, this is what should have happened, and we didn't have processes. So we're not saying it wasn't a system to identify irregular expenditure. It was just the application of the legislation which resulted in the specific irregular expenditure being incurred. I think of the $12.1 million, approximately $10 million or so relates to the specific Triple PFA issue that we highlighted to the department. And then the other issue that was also highlighted was the material underspending on the rural household infrastructure grant. Again, I can only factually report on the circumstances. It is also in the annual report of the department, whereby they actually saying that we've only spent about $62 million of the $100 million, and obviously it's highlighted, as I've indicated, because it deals with public interest service delivery issues. And then on the next page, we've included a very high-level recommendation to the department saying that they should implement the review process to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. So what I'm saying is a review process, so they do have a process whereby they go and check for compliance with laws and regulations, but just somebody should just go back again and say, is this enough? Are we doing enough to cover ourselves in terms of compliance with laws and regulations? And then obviously, in general, all departments must strengthen its internal controls to ensure that they prevent irregular expenditure, and in the event where they can't prevent it, they've got an adequate system to detect it and adequately disclose such expenditure. And then a basic high-level recommendation is that adequate planning and project management should be implemented to ensure that all allocated funds are spent appropriately and timely to achieve objectives, because that also has an impact now on your predetermined objectives that you are reporting on. As far as on the next page, as far as predetermined objectives are concerned, I did mention that we had an issue with the usefulness of the information, the measurability. Again, you can't measure if somebody says, a very lame example, we will issue a report on a specific project. You need to say when you will issue the report, or by when, what report you will be issued, in what format, and specifically to which project it relates to. And in terms of our predetermined objectives, as I've indicated, it's an ever-evolving process. And with us anticipating on expressing an opinion on predetermined objectives in the future, we've actually now also went as far as developed a significant framework whereby we said, if, for example, 20% of the targets are not met in this specific program, then it's actually a qualification in terms of its material ones, because we go through a whole set of criteria of selecting which ones are material, thought process. In terms of we go and identify which programs are important to the department in terms of service delivery, etc. And once we get to that specific quantum, it gives us a specific category. Is it qualification? Is it adverse? Or is it as a result of a disclaimer? Unfortunately, the department was found wanting in terms of measurability, and it was significant enough to elevate the audit report as a finding. And that goes the same goes for the reliability of the information, which is basically saying that if you take your strategic plan and you take your annual report that was reported, where we did not achieve the legislation allows for you to say what the variance or the explanation why we did not achieve. But that explanation should also be substantiated. It should also be supported. And again, we found certain issues that certain selections which we could not verify. And then certain source information or evidence which was provided was not valid. So we would the target would say minutes of meetings, and then we would provide it with, let's say, an agenda. You need to have those minutes of meetings to, I'm not disputing whether the meeting did take place or not, but I cannot say that it did take place because I don't have those minutes. That's the only source of evidence that you can say if a meeting actually took place or not. Again, the recommendation, if the department just applies the treasury regulations, I think there's a new performance management framework that's out. It was issued sometime last year in August or so. That deals with, or that tries to refine what exactly Treasury requires in terms of the departments to conform with the SMART principle, that being that your targets should be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. And then obviously just to make sure that we maintain an appropriate and sufficient system of collecting and collating and making sure that the evidence is there to support whatever we are reporting on. On the next slide, the table that deals with the summary of compliance findings. The first one is quite an interesting one because I think what's staying going hand in hand with the questions that the members have been asking now is a lot of departments or entities, entities submit financial statements for the sake of submitting financial statements on the 31st of May to make sure that they achieve their compliance. And then we come in, and as the office of the AG, you audit them, and they are actually allowed to go back and rectify those financial statements. And once they've rectified, they're sitting with a set of financial statements, which we say it truly reflects because adjustment has been made, but it's been a process. It was a big process to get to the statement where it fairly reflects. And it's always just swept under the carpet So now, but if you actually read what PFMA requires, which is also what I mentioned in the beginning, that PFMA says accounting officer must maintain throughout the year a proper accounting and financial record, and then must then obviously also submit and make sure it's supported. So as soon as we've got an adjustment which we deem is material in terms of our materiality framework, that's where we saw this in now to say that yes, you did get an unqualified audit opinion, but it was also a bit of process and effort that was also involved to get to that specific process as well. And then expenditure management. I think our most favorite one there, I'll look for the day when the departments do not incur or transgress a specific piece of legislation, which is the irregular and then the payment due to creditors which were not settled within 30 days of receipt of invoice. On the second one, I think I've mentioned it in the latter part of my presentation, but I have to mention that the department's action plan in the prior year also identified this as a problem, and obviously it has been coming for about 3 or 4 years, And they actually had quite a concerted effort to try and deal with this non-compliance issue. They put a number of processes in place, but unfortunately, they were still found wanting. But I have to say that the number of instances noted were quite far less than the previous cycle. The irregular expenditure, again, it was just a lack of interpretation of the legislation, if I can call it that, for lack of a better phrase. And then a comparative bid, which was only advertised for 19 days and not 21 days. It was just one bid, but it was quite naughty because the logo system was down and the department couldn't place the order with government printers. And what eventually happened is, on the comparative bid, it indicates the start date and the end date. By the time the system came on and the order was placed, it was too late, and GPW informed the department that we will not be able to place the ad today, it will only go out next week. And which then resulted that obviously by the time it went out, it was already within the advertising or the 21 days of notice period. So somebody should have just basically applied and said, this is the impact. And but yeah, just that specific one instance noticed. Transfers and conditional grants. Again, the rural household infrastructure grant, this being a new grant, it's actually a schedule 7 grant in terms of Division of Revenue Act, and there are certain legislative requirements that the accounting officer of who receives the grant must go to Treasury and actually certify and say, yes, I do have adequate controls and systems in place to be able to deal and spend the grant. And unfortunately, because it was a new grant, the department just basically, as a result of oversight, did not certify and complete and submit the certification to National Treasury as required by this piece of legislation. Yes, ma'am.
I don't think we are getting you. We understand you correctly. Can you just unpack this one too?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Basically, the Division of Revenue, you get your PFMA, which are all your other dealing with public finance management in general. But once you get specific transfers or grants that fall under the ambit of DORA, there's another specific set of legislation that also becomes applicable. Now, some of them, they actually distinguish between the different categories. Like, for example, you get Schedule 4, 5, and 6 grants falling under this ambit, and then 1, 2, and 7 falling under this ambit. Now, Section 10 of DORA requires the receiving officer to complete a certification, a certificate of compliance, whereby I think matters of compliance that are dealt with in that specific certification just basically says, do you have enough controls in place in terms of reporting and implementing this and planning this? And that certification is then signed off by the accounting officer and then submitted to National Treasury within 2 weeks of the piece of legislation becoming applicable. So basically, because the rural household infrastructure grant was a new grant, it was the first time grant last year, that process was not completed, which basically means that the certificate was not completed and then submitted to National Treasury.
No. If I can, the accounting officers, are they not familiar? Does not matter whether there will always be new grants because we are always improving. We are always improving. So I would like you not to say it's because of this. Because I think you can just highlight that this certification was not concluded or not submitted to the National Treasury. Because if you are saying it was a new grant, I don't think it is proper, because there will always be new grants as we are, you know, we are improving the financial and then the funding models of the projects. So I just wanted to clarify that. I would ask the question that are the accounting officers not familiar of the Treasury regulations or the PNSA?
Yes. Chairperson, you've hit the nail right on the head, and those are questions certainly that are sitting in our minds. And I would think that people in that situation are sufficiently qualified to know what is expected of them and to be on top of any new legislation that there might be, particularly pertaining to financial things. And so I think, yes, we are very interested to hear. I don't think we want to fudge over things. You know, just give us the truth.
I'd like to add my bit to this as well. And I want to ask the presenter, in your opinion, and I've made a note there, just you beat me to a chair. I've made a note here and I've said, does the non-completion and the fact that it hasn't been submitted, does it not point to ignorance by the accounting officer, in your opinion?
I think, in Jarunyana, don't try to uzibophelele, because what you need to say what is the opinion of the auditor, what was expected and it was not done. The reasons are going to be, I think the accounting officer is at least can be able, has the ability to respond to this, why it was not. But don't do as Bopi.
Thank you. I think you're saying I mustn't bopper you, but you are trying to bopper me now. let me start off by saying this. I'm not coming up with, first of all, excuses or the root cause of exactly why it wasn't done. I was just saying it was a new grant, that's factual. It was a new grant, it was a first-time grant. It is, however, also disclosed in the MTEF. Like, for example, if I look at the E&Es of Treasury for the 12-13 year, it does indicate there going forward how much it will be, even if it's just estimates, but it does indicate. So probably it was there in the E&Es of the prior year as well. That being said, as far as the accounting officer's responsibility and as far as my opinion is concerned in terms of ignorance, I'm not allowed to make such comments. DORA says you must certify. The grant is there. I conducted my procedures. I went and I looked and it was not certified. It was not completed and submitted to Treasury. And that is what I'm reporting. Thank you. Okay, as far as our recommendations are concerned in the next page, again, we're saying that the department should just maybe look at implementing or adequating its review process of financial statements prior to submission to ensure compliance. I think we've dealt with why exactly the review process is quite necessary and required. And then obviously also a system to ensure that procured goods and services that are procured in a transparent, cost-effective, and efficient manner as required by the legislation. Some of the recommendations we've put in there is, for example, you know, prior to somebody signing off for payment, maybe there should be a procurement checklist that ticks off exactly what the requirements are for a specific piece of procurement, and then somebody can certify that, yes, indeed, all pieces of legislation were followed and indeed adhered to. And again, I'm also highlighting here that despite quite a big effort of the department, the payments not affected within 30 days were still noticed or instances thereof. However, the instances were a little bit lower than instances noted in the prior year. And then just the overall risk management process to ensure that the department complies with all its required laws and regulations. Okay, on the next page, the three fundamentals that I spoke to in terms of key controls. We are basically saying that the accounting officer did not exercise oversight responsibility regarding financial and performance reporting, and then obviously also was compliance with laws and regulations, as emanating from the findings that we are highlighting in the audit report. And it's quite critical that the committee also know that our response is directed at the accounting officer, because as far as we are concerned, in terms of the PFMA, which is what we are auditing against, the accounting officer is the person mandated to be responsible for the department or for the specific entity. And then when it focuses a little bit further down, when it deals with methods of daily processing and financial and performance management, we've changed our heading a little bit to say management, which is obviously now referring to certain officers which are responsible for normal day-to-day processing and running and preparation of reconciliations, etc., saying that they did not prepare regular and accurate and complete financial and performance reports, which are both supported and evidenced by reliable information. I think if you read the specific heading as well, the way it's structured and what it talks to, it will talk to the findings on the financial statement, the predetermined objectives where we noted issues of supporting evidence not being there for certain of the targets which we selected for testing. And the last one, just the review of compliance with laws and regulations because of all the non-compliance issues which we've noticed. And then the last page, going forward, the department has developed an action plan to address the findings that we've identified in the current year. We've had engagements with the accounting officer whereby the plan was discussed. The plan was also recently, I think it was earmarked to be tabled at an audit committee meeting. We do feel that the plan is adequate. How the implementation thereof is going to result in better audit outcomes, that remains to be seen. We can only assess it going forward. But one thing that we've noticed from the department as well, they are quite willing to adjust and aid the audit process. They didn't dispute all our findings, but the material ones were one of two material items, the irregular expenditure one and the disclosure one. Vacancies in key management positions were also filled during the period under review. A compliance officer, which we hope then will deal with the matter of compliance monitoring. The CIO's position has also been filled, and then the CFO position, because the CFO was acting for about 9 or 6 months of the financial year. And then obviously we're also saying that proper planning should be engaged in to ensure that adequate implementation of the sanitation function in order to ensure service delivery. Because obviously we are just highlighting that because if you already have a material underspending on 100,000, I think if we notice on the E&E that it's increasing year by year. And then our audit opinion in terms of predetermined objectives in future, again, the department just needs to make sure that its systems and policies and procedures are adequate in order to facilitate or to be able to support an opinion on predetermined objectives in future. And obviously the ultimate goal, Chair, is just to get an unqualified audit opinion with no matters so that we can then step away from financial statement items and then focus on predetermined objectives in service delivery items. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andres. Okay.
Just in conclusion, Chair, I unfortunately stumbled upon this piece of paper yesterday and I'm only adding it out this morning, so my apologies to the committee. But it's just a matter for noting. It doesn't deal with any specific issues. It's for the perusal of the committee. It deals with emerging risks and issues that we consider which may have an impact on the audit report in future periods. It deals with the library books which have now been legislated to be maintained and accounted for by specifically departments in the financial records. It deals with graph statements, what's effective, what's not effective. So it's just for the perusal of the audit committee, highlighting the audit committee. So I like to the committee exactly what the emerging risks are that the departments and entities out there might be faced with.
Thank you very much, Andres. I think your presentation was very clear. I think the members are going to interact. In fact, we have already started interaction. But we'll continue. But I just want to indicate that yes, clean audit is one that we are advocating. But at the same time, what is important to Parliament? Output only. You can have your clean audit because it's a requirement. But that does not mean that you have performed. Our main interest is on service delivery. It's on the, is there any value for money? Not just spending the money for the sake of spending. But that is not your rule. You have just given us a green light of what is happening. And then the portfolio committee knows what they have to do. Honorable members, let me give you, Mpo, you are welcome. Let me give you the opportunity. Honorable Bowman, Honorable Stein, for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I want to hone in perhaps on two things that are of particular concern to me.
and to get some comment about that. And you've spoken quite a lot about this quantifying, measurability, measuring things. And because it, and we are raising this all the time with the department, and I don't think we are getting there. Now, I don't know, because if we haven't got, if we're not quantifying things, we can't measure, which means that our oversight is hampered. Because it's all very well to say we delivered so many thousands of units, but out of how many are we delivering? So, you know, you've touched on that quite a lot in your reporting. And I don't know how we, as a committee, can get the department into a better way of reporting. So, you know, I think we need to try and do that. And it's not in this report either. Now, in this, the other thing in this section, or perhaps let me refer to the vacancy thing that you've referred to here at the end. And, again, I have a concern, because if vacancies are empty, then we're not delivering. You know, that's where we're going wrong right at the source. And it would seem to me from this report, and I think if we go to about 220, it gives you a report there on table 3.3, employment and vacancies by critical occupation. Now, that to me, there's the vacancy rate is high. And I don't know whether when you look at, you know, your audit, you actually look at something like that. Because, and we are getting all the time, when we are querying this, you know, that we're in a, doing a turnaround strategy, and so we've got a moratorium. Now, I'm just asking, would it be reasonable of us to expect that, you know, this, we shouldn't be taking forever with the turnaround strategy and filling vacancies, because we are now halfway through our term and we're still getting this kind of reporting. You know, are we going to be able to get something clearer than that? And then I think also just my last point, Chairperson, and that is under, I think it's the chapter 2 in this report, when we look at the service delivery here, and all of these, and I'm not going to go through them because it's going to take a long time, but and we look at all that has not been achieved, and again, you've alluded to this in your reporting, reports that should have been done that weren't done, planning that should have been done that hasn't been achieved, reports sitting, you know, on the at the in the DG's office and so on. So, you know, because this is the only thing that we've got to be able to gauge whether things are functioning right. And we don't get to the end and then find that, you know, we've got things that we should have picked up earlier on. I think I'm going to leave it at that. They're pretty sort of general, because tomorrow when we've got the department here, obviously we can engage in the detail.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, without taking away from the department the fact that the Auditor General has given them a unqualified report, my question really to the Auditor General is, with everything that you've highlighted to us, with all these compliance findings, you know, I sit here and I ask myself, should it not really have been a qualified report? Because, I mean, these issues are quite serious. Particularly if you indicate that, and it's a pity we don't get that type of analysis, where the issues that were emphasized as matters of emphasis in the previous years, I would have loved to have seen some sort of analysis about whether those issues have been attended to or whether they repeat themselves. But I must emphasize, Chairperson, what my colleague has said again. Auditing reports today is not just about whether the money has been spent. It's in fact about whether the money has been spent efficiently and effective. And unless we get measurable targets, we actually don't know that. We can have 99.9% of the budget spent, but we don't know whether it's been spent efficiently. And it again brings me back to the fact that should it then not be a qualified report? Chairperson, I want to... One of the last comments made was the vacancies, and in particular the one of the CFO. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you said it's now been filled. And I happen to know, because I learned last week, that it's just been filled. But I mean, it's now been filled in a different financial year, not in the one that we're reporting on. So for all intents and purposes, for the financial year that we're busy looking at, it was still, there was still a person in an acting position, which for that particular level of vacancy is quite serious. So I don't think we should, you know, pat ourselves or the department on the shoulder because they've now, 9 months into a new financial year, they've finally decided to fill that post. Some of these issues are extremely serious. The fact that you say there was irregular expenditure that was not prevented by the department, because their first task in terms of the PFMA is to prevent it. Now, it would appear, and it comes through your reporting, and I'm sure that we'll find it, and we have found it with reports to this committee, and I've asked the accounting officer to his face before whether he is in fact, and I put it generally, whether all accounting officers are familiar with the various pieces of legislation. And what's coming through is that perhaps they're not. You remember, Chairperson, I actually suggested that they, and I'm not sure if it was the Auditor General's office or, in fact, it was Treasury, and I suggested that they be given a course, all the accounting officers, on certain of the pieces of legislation, because they appear to be simply either ignorant, or then it means they simply don't comply with it. They know about it, but they, you know, sort of brush it aside. Just as a last question, Chair. Just two last questions. One that I'd like to know is, part of the accounting officer's responsibility is to where, in fact, it has now been determined that there is money owing to the department, that it is their responsibility to recoup that money. Now, I'm not sure how far it extends in terms of the provincial departments, whether the national accounting officer is still responsible. And just briefly, I'm referring to a situation here where a court has indicated that there's some 20-odd million rand that should be paid by a developer to the department. It's been a few years now, and that money hasn't been recovered for whatever reason. Now, is that the accounting officer of the national department's responsibility or of the provincial department? And then lastly, Chair, we do know that the senior employees in the department have all signed performance agreements. Is your auditing, is it part of actually checking those performance agreements and the performance against the agreements? And do you then give an opinion related to that or not? And if not, why not, and shouldn't it be part of the audit? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, your opening remarks were just like screen audit versus output. Do I need to comment on that? Because obviously I'm focused in terms of PFMA. My processes are quite governed by financial reporting, so financial statements fairly present. And yes, ideally we would like to express an opinion on output, but the only way we would be able to do so is once we start reporting on predetermined objectives, which we are not at this stage yet. As far as the vacancies question is concerned, and this goes hand in hand with the SMS, I'll try and answer them both in tandem. We do look at compliance with PSR, public service regulations as well, which requires, it's a whole host of requirements from your appointment. Says it needs to be advertised, you must fill vacancies within 6 months. It's quite detailed as well. So we do audit in terms of HR management against compliance as well. Now, what we've noticed is we do apply a materiality and significance framework. I have to go to any entity and say, based on the entity's structure, what the entity consists of, which component do I deem important that I would use for the base to determine my materiality based on my methodology. And once I've got that figure, I audit against that figure, and if I find any instances of either non-compliance or financial misstatement, I have to compare against debt materiality figure, because this is my threshold to say what am I comfortable in accepting as not being material. So yes, to answer the other question in terms of the vacancies now, we did note instances with regard to highlighting the vacancies issued to the accounting officer, but it only remained in the management report, which is an internal document, but not it wasn't significant enough for us to elevate to the audit report. Then, as far as the Chapter 2 is concerned and the service delivery method, I think I'll leave that to the accounting officer. He'll come in and test for his report tomorrow morning or whenever he is that is available. And then as far as Mr. Stein's question is concerned with regard to the compliance matters, I've sort of touched on it in terms of the significance of a framework. We do have a compliance framework whereby we look at all the compliance matters, right from the strategic and strategic planning and performance management, expenditure management, procurement management, even as far as the audit committee and the internal audit. We look at, for example, the number of meetings for internal audit you're supposed to have, and you only have one meeting. Are you really effective then? Then it becomes a 3 out of 4, it's 75% error rate. So there are those significant frameworks which we apply. And then obviously we also noted number of instances, and we measure those against our materiality and significance framework, and we see what should just be for the tensions management to say. So these issues have been highlighted to management. We've got a management report which is almost 200 pages. But it's quite detailed with all the management responses, all the tables and all our findings, which we communicate through to management, and they act upon that document. From that document, we then look at the findings which we deem are significant enough to elevate to the audit report. So as far as the qualification is concerned, again, if you look at our requirements in terms of the Public Audit Act, it does say financial statements, and it says to make sure that people comply and predetermined objectives. But right now, because we're still in this, we're highlighting the financial reporting framework, it doesn't allow us really to be able to report on the other two matters going forward. But it's something certainly that the AG is trying to move towards, as far as I can see, in terms of our working papers and how we are approaching our audits these days. And then the CFO comment, yes, unfortunately, it is 9 months into the financial year. But what's of critical importance is I'm in agreement with you. It is an important position, but at least the department is doing something about it. It has been filled with a permanent person, and we're just highlighting that. And I think if you actually look at where we are mentioning it in our presentation, we're saying going forward. So at least going forward, we know what's done is done. We've issued our report. We've noted whatever we've noted. But now, hopefully, I can work with Ms. Matati and going forward, build a sustainable relationship to ensure better audit outcomes. As far as the comment is concerned with regard to the money to be recouped, yes, the onus is upon each individual entity to recoup whatever money is owed to that entity, but ultimately the money, all of the money is owed to government. And the uniqueness of the human settlement sector structure is such a way that you've got a national accounting office and you've got provincial accounting offices, but these provincial accounting offices operate quite autonomously. So they're sitting, they've got their own entity, they operate. And the national department basically acts as a conduit whereby we receive the funds and we transfer the funds. And the only sort of stick that the national department has is in the event of a department maybe not performing, where they can, redirect money. But apart from that, in terms of the oversight and monitoring and accountability, it is the individual, this is accountability. But to aid the process and facilitate the process, the National Department does have an SIU unit which deals with all these matters and ties and sort of coordinate them to ensure that eventually the desired outcomes are achieved. But it's still the individual person's responsibility.
If I may ask. Now, there is a perception that the province has spent the money irregularly, and then it means that the National Department can approach the SIU to make sure that, I did not understand what you're saying about the SIU.
What I'm saying, Mandabuza, is specifically regarding our own. Let's, for example, somebody calls and says, I'm aware of this specific corrupt, or somebody took a bribe to be able to allocate a house. That's what I'm talking about, the department's own internal SIU unit. The department is a SIU unit which deals with all these fraud hotlines and stuff. And within that specific, within the department, that's just the department national. They just have a unit that's established that it deals with all these matters, and that's just purely to try and coordinate the matters and not have all these issues staggered around. I'm not aware of that approach, but if indeed he has, then I'm not aware of exactly which one he has approached, whether he's approached his own internal SIU or whether he's approached the national SIU. But as far as Mr. Sain's question was concerned, is whose responsibility is it to collect the money? And I just highlighted that you've got the different DGs, but there's a unit within national that deals with all these problems, and they are involved in trying to, they would be involved in trying to recover money or investigate matters and follow up matters like those within the internal order function.
What I'm saying is if there's an instance has been found where a developer defrauded a provincial department. They've been through the court procedure. There's a judgment in favor of the department for, say, 20 million rand. Whose responsibility is that to see that that 20 million rand is... The judgment has been made. If the provincial DG takes his or her own time in getting it, is there not some sort of responsibility on the national department to disburse the money in the first place to also make sure that that money is recouped? That's what I'm trying to find out.
When you say the money, I see you mean the money went from the national department to the provincial department. But that's why I also highlighted the fact that these two departments operate autonomously. So the national department is not involved in the whole appointment of the service provider and how the money was spent, and the decisions were basically taken by that specific provincial department.
That is your interpretation.
That's my interpretation.
Because concurrent function, I don't think it means that.
Yes.
That is only your interpretation. Because our belief as parliament, once you give somebody funds, you are accountable. At the end of the day, parliament appropriates funds to the national department. So the national department, it's accountable for those funds. So I think we don't have to emphasize this autonomous, because there is nothing like autonomous, because the constitution is clear on this current concurrent function. What is stipulated there is that at least we must work cooperatively together, and there's a provision of intergovernmental relations. So this autonomous responsibility, I don't think it's proper. I think you have to go back in your salapans, my officials, would really this autonomous, you are perpetrating something and you are following this again. But you must try, let's shy away from using this autonomous thing. We rather use the concurrent function, and then I think it's time that we request those people who are drafting this constitution, or Mr. Ramaphosa, they must come and tell us. Really? No, I'm serious. Because at some stage it gets abused. Not by you. It gets abused. So at some stage we need to be in one room, and then we invite those Ramaphosas. They must tell us, what does it mean, this concurrent function? Because I think for me, the constitution is very clear, and there's even a intergovernmental relations that are supporting that concurrent function. So it's just a discussion, because we're discussing.
And Mom Dambuza, until that day that Cyril Ramaphosa comes here, I leave this question to be answered by the DGs tomorrow then. Because that's what I'm trying to demonstrate, that it's like this, but you've got a central SIU unit that coordinates and tries and aids that. So that element is over. I let the department exactly answer that question. And as far as the performance management, I think I've answered it in the sense that, you know, it wasn't significant enough to elevate, but there were instances which were highlighted to management.
My last question in terms of auditing or reviewing actual performance against the performance agreements.
That also takes place, but obviously we are limited in terms of the legislation. The legislative requirement just says, is there a performance agreement, is it signed in, did you actually conduct a performance assessment at the end of the year, and once that's been done, you just take it off, and that's as far as the legislation requires us to go. What the results of the performance assessment yields, and how that dealt with that, the onus of the department.
Has it been done?
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, we did note instances where performance agreements were not signed, but they were not significant enough for us to elevate to the audit report.
I just want to pick up on something else that you said that was off. I would like to have you elaborate a bit more, clarify for me. You spoke about financial regressions. Can I understand that a little bit better? Because it doesn't sound very good to me if we are financially regressing. I just want to understand that.
For the purposes of this committee, human settlements audit opinion has remained unchanged. So what I'm saying is there are one or two other departments out there in which the financial position is regressed. When I mean financial position, just the opinion. So you might find that one entity experienced difficulties with, for argument's sake, the assets, and they've got a qualification on assets, whereas in the previous years they had an unqualified audit opinion. No, we have remained unchanged. That's why the table was.
You made the presentation. thank you. You're welcome, Honorable Bula. Thank you very much, and I think you. Okay. There's a question there.
I just wanted to know, because the department is continuing to get this unqualified audit opinion, what if there are ongoing problems? Maybe that are going on for the past 2 to 3 years, like this irregular expenditure. It doesn't affect this unqualified audit.
Ma'am, as alluded to during the presentation, again, I'm going to go back to my significance and materiality framework. We audit against materiality, the department adjusts its financial statement and it is closed, then we have to audit. Because the issue with financial reporting is, if you were given 100 rand to buy 10 bars of soap, okay, there's a number of considerations we go through. First of all, if you were supposed to get the 3 quotations, it's a compliance which is required by the legislation. But in the eventuality that you did buy the 100 bars of soap for the 100 rand, you got your value, you got your invoice, the expenditure is valid, which means that yes, you paid and you got something in return, but you didn't follow obtaining the procurement process by getting 3 quotations. Then it becomes that's the way the element of irregular creeps in, because the law requires you to follow the procurement process. So now, the financial opinion that I'm expressing is on the financial statements, on the statement of financial position, the statement of financial performance. So that 100 rand is in there, is 100 rand, it should be 100 rand, it's valid, supported by the invoice, it was just not procured in a transparent or cost-effective or efficient manner as required by the piece of legislation, and that's why we're highlighting the non-compliance. But you can, in the eventuality of not disclosing it, incur or obtain a qualification with regard to completeness of irregular expenditures, as mentioned earlier.
Thank you very much. Mativa, Oganya, not your meeting. You are not invited, in fact, but just observe us. But you are welcome. Ne? I welcomed you. I didn't chase you away. Because you are not invited. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Andres. I think you are going to work with this committee as you are deployed. And I think you are still going to, we are still going to invite you. Even, you know, there's also in the one-on-one session between the chairperson and the auditor general, as well as the committee. At some stage, we would be strict that we don't invite even the media, anybody else. At some stage, we are just by ourselves. So it is. You must expect that. Sometimes we won't invite you. We will be in a caucus. Okay, thank you very much. I think this presentation, we are through with it. You can be released. The Auditor General, I don't see the people from FSC, but they said they are coming. Kobisa, what is the situation? Okay, we can just attend, Honorable Women, just take a 5 minute break, comfort break, and then we'll check the whereabouts of FSC. Thank you.